time to lose your shit. Everybody's progress clip for that legend Kevin Smith.
Welcome to this podcast. I'm Kevin Smith.
Scott Bossier.
As you know, as the whole world fucking knows, we are all under quarantine, stuck in different places. I am in Los Angeles at my house. Moj, tell them where you are.
I am in Oakland, California, in my house.
What has the lockdown been like for you? What is your daily day looking like?
Mine is... It looks eerily like pre-lockdown.
You have the staccato delivery of a man who has not interacted with other people in a long time. You're like, I am indoors and I have forgotten how to string syllables together.
Are you asking me to respond to you and what you are saying? Because I speak to myself. Look, I've been in lockdown for a while. Time is meaningless.
I've forgotten how to convey simple information.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like what else. We've been rewatching stuff. Like at first, when it first started, we had this whole like, oh, let's do a sort of, you know, movie of the week, like movies we loved shit, kind of like go back in time. So because we had watched the Fosse Verdon series. We watched that, and then I have the Criterion, All That Jazz. So we went back to the original. We watched All That Jazz, and we were like, oh, let's watch like old movies. So then we watched that, and then The Big Chill, and then we watched Big Night, which was like Long Branch represent.
Yeah, right? Stanley Tucci movie, right?
Yeah. I hadn't seen that in forever, so we watched that.
Fucking A, man.
But then that sort of died away. Because it was sort of like, you know, it felt like at the very beginning, it was like, it was about making bold statements of like, we're going to do this. And then it was just, it's gone on so long that it sort of.
Like, it's like, fuck the past. Yeah. Fuck all that shit.
What's new? Give Big me new night. Shit.
Fuck Tucci. He had his time. Now it's my time.
When's my time, Tucci?
Fucking Tucci time for Moj. And then once I have it, it won't be called Tucci time anymore.
I want my own big night.
Fuck Tucci time. I feel like the whole world is slowed down as a country, if not a world. All of us on Tucci time at this point.
He's back.
He never left. Fucking how dare you. Fucking implication with that statement is that he's got something to apologize for. He's a fucking Tucci. You know what's really weird is Jennifer has like a built-in aversion to Stanley
Tucci. She's anti-Tucci.
I'm like, she's so not the Tucci. And so like anytime I'm like, oh, let's watch this. She's like, who's in it? And I'll list the cast. And I always try to like, I learned to leave him off because I used to like list him in order of where he was. Like, blah, 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 Stanley Tucci. She goes, oh, the Tucci? Fuck that. I ain't watching that. So then I learned to bury him at the back of the fucking
mumble
list.
It under your breath. Like,
yes. Yes. Yeah. And fucking Tucci, the Tucci. Like, what'd you say? The fucking Tucci? I ain't watching that. So then I've taken to like just leaving him out of the fucking cast list altogether so that he's a mildly unpleasant surprise in the middle of a movie that she's enjoying and shit. But she never said why. I was like, what? Did you meet him? Was he a dick? She's like, I just don't go for it. I'm like, what do you mean it? Like good acting? Fucking charming, debonair fucking dude who makes baldness work? What are you talking about? What is it?
And she didn't have anything.
She got nothing, dude. Nothing but hate for the Tucci. And so.
No, watch Tucci in Big Night. Like that, he's slaying it. He's all over.
Not for nothing, but you fucking watch Tucci in Big Night. Don't tell me.
I did already.
All right, so you've heard what me and Mosier have been up to. We've caught up. Now I got a treat. I have been quarantine cleaning my office for the last like 2-3 weeks and stuff. At one point, I didn't want to give it up in the first place, so like I poured over goddamn every box, and when I opened things, I found shit from going back 10 fucking years. going back to shit that I saved from the beginning of the career and whatnot. I found one of the original Clerks press kits, which, you know, I'd known was somewhere, but there it was in a fucking box under a bunch of film festival books that, you know, like I collected over the years from all the festivals we went to. So it was just a, you know, fucking gold rush of nostalgia and memories and like, oh, thank God this still exists. And then it gets filed away like the fucking Ark of the Covenant in a big warehouse and shit, but at least I know where it is. And so it's unveiled countless fucking treasures, not the least of which is the treasure that I bring to you today. Oh, yes. You remember a good friend of ours, our old pal, Emo Kev.
I do.
I discovered an untapped reservoir, a well, an underground well, if you will, reflecting pool of a boy age 18 to 19. This collection of writing already had a title, penned in 1989. I didn't come up with this now. This is what 1989 Kev called it, the Shadow Notes.
Oh, shit. That's amazing.
Oh, yes. We are going to dive into the shadow notes. Oh, I didn't proofread the whole thing, but I took a glance and it is dramatically delicious. I used to write on this Smith Corona typewriter, and my parents got me this extension package, which turned it into a word processor. It served me well. I wrote so many things on it. It was my closest friend, you know, most days between high school and doing Clerks, and as much as I could just go there and fucking tell it all my secrets and shit and my dreams. So post Clerks, me and Scott go to Sundance, Tokyo in March of 1994.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a adjunct to Sundance, and they picked a few movies to go over to Tokyo, and we were ambassadors and blah blah blah. And we'd already gone into Universal and met with them and pitched Mallrats, and so they were like, yes, write the script. So before I went and got on the plane, I bought like my first Macintosh. I bought an Apple laptop so that I could start writing Mallrats on the way to Japan and, like, you know, while we were going to all these festivals and stuff, me and Scott. So I abandoned the word processor at that point, and it went into storage, and then went into the office. And then years ago, when Ming was working at the office, Ming Chen, him of comic book men fame,
mm-hmm.
I said, Ming, can you know, in your spare time, like, print out all this, my old writings and stuff. Here's a pile of discs and my old word processor. And so, you know, God bless him. You know, thankfully he was a bit of a fan, because he was printing out some of the most emo-licious fucking shit on the planet, man. It's like tortured fucking, who am I? Who do I love? Who do I choose? Like just bad, man. But in any event, he found a way to do it without, you know, the Smith Corona. He just hacked it and created a program that printed it out. And he printed out, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 fucking binders full of my old writing. That, and mind you, he did this like well over a decade ago, like maybe even 15 fucking years ago.
And you never looked at it.
And I just never once. In fact, like, I know he printed up some shit, but, like, you know, like, there are some early Clerk scenes and stuff. But I was always like, man, he never finished the fucking job, slacker. Oh, he finished the fucking job. The slacker was the guy who just took time fucking finding it. So I found it. And as soon as I cracked it open, I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh, there's one person in the world who will appreciate this. Scott Mosier.
Wow.
First entry. So all thanks to Ming, who provided me content like 15 fucking years after intended, man, and saved all this goofy shit, man. I got to see the building blocks to how I got to Clerks and stuff. The first entry is in Shadow Notes. Shadow Notes number one, Scott, meaning I knew I was going to make more.
How many are there? Did you count how many there are?
Let me tell you. Oh, my God. What a great question.
Well, I just want to know, like, I think it's like before, as people enter into the Shadow Notes, it's like, you know, it's like, are there?
Dare you enter the Shadow Notes?
Prepare thyself to enter the Shadow
Notes. I see here six. There are a total of six Shadow Notes, Scott. So I think we'll get to at least three. They're not long, but something tells me we'll be stopping often.
Gotcha.
First Shadow Note, Scott, was written at 12:40 a.m. on August 31st, 1989.
And where are you now? Yeah, what? Paint a picture.
This Kev Smith is dating Amy LaPointe. After I got out of Henry Hudson, she was still in Henry Hudson. She was in Kim Loughran's grade. Kim Loughran, my high school girlfriend, was 1 year below me. Now, Kim, I started dating, you know, in 1986, May 25th, 1986. And I dated her, you know, all the way up to when we went off to do Dogma. So like 2018. So it was like 12 years off and on that we dated. And Kim, you have to understand, was like, that's what I wanted to do with my life, not make movies. I had no plan or anything like that. My biggest plan was to grow up and marry Kim. Like, I was very much like Lloyd Dobler. I've graduated Henry Hudson. I graduated already a year ago. I tried to go up to college in Manhattan at the New School for Social Research. That's when I started hanging out with Brian and Walter, pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
In fact, I start leaving school to go and hang out with them, like, you know, fuck New York, and just go down to Jersey, where I live still with my parents, to play hockey and fucking foosball at the Rec. And I'm yearning to be something else. I've not seen Slacker, so I don't know it's going to be film. And I start dating Amy LaPointe like in April, maybe March of 89. And this Shadow Notes and the general thrust of the Shadow Notes are a guy who does not want to be dating Amy LaPointe anymore, but does want to be dating Kim Loughran again. Now, Kim Loughran, in the fall of 89, goes off to Carnegie Mellon University.
Do you think there was any correlation between her suddenly going off to Carnegie Mellon and not being around and sort of re-piquing your interest?
It's exactly that. Look, I don't even need to read the Shadow Notes. You just analyze this fuck, and that's exactly what happened. It was like, you know, oh my God, she's the one that got away. And, you know, to be fair, Kim was wonderful. She was like my best friend all through high school.
Yeah.
But I started to romanticize her, like, even more so. And that began, like, this, the Shadow Notes, Scott, as they've come to be known, as I titled them back in 1989. They begin August 31st, 1989. But I remember when Kim graduated Henry Hudson in June of 89, like, we all wound up going to, like, there are pictures I have of me, like, putting her in a happy half Nelson, like, while she's, like, in her graduation outfit.
Oh, those times. The happy.
Yes, not the terrified help me half Nelson, but more like my ex-boyfriend is being physical with me, but in such a blatant way that clearly it's not a romantic thing. It's a older brother, little sister type of thing. But that's where it began to be another romantic thing for me, where I was like, oh my God, I actually miss her.
So, like, oh my God, I could actually take her in a wrestling match.
I'm going to fucking Jimmy Superfly Snooker off the top fucking bar, off the top of the ring. I'm not even fucking like athletic enough to know what the thing at the, what is it called? The top what in a wrestling ring?
Oh, like the.
So not a man, such a cuck.
On the, like, the post, the corner post, but I don't think that's what
turnbuckle.
The turnbuckle, sure. I'd take
turnbuckle.
That. Turnbuckle. Yeah. I'd take that. See, you arrived there. You got there. There's a man in there.
It took a while. That's what my dad used to say. There's a man in there, boy. find him. I said, I can't. It's dark. There's so many shadows. I must write notes. He was like, oh, God.
Grace,
he's fucking emoing up and writing again. Fucking shadow notes. Call the cops. I'm telling you, somebody should have called the cops. Good thing nobody saw this shit because it sounds like the ravings of a stalker.
Oh.
Thank God I got like movie work because otherwise I would have haunted poor Kim Locker in her whole fucking life. This is the world, the mind of Emo Kev, newly turned 19 in 1989. He's also seen Tim Burton's Batman, which came out June 23rd, 1989. And hence probably shadow notes probably had something to do with it. This boy fancies himself something of a Bruce Wayne Batman type, Scott.
You see, you have two identities? It seems like you kind of just have one.
I know. One lame one. Not even like fucking one cool one and one even cooler one. Just one lame one that does a lot of writing about his feelings and shit. But all I can say is thank God he poured it out on the page and wasn't like a real life creepazoid. If you know him in the real world, you wouldn't have been frightened by him. You would have felt bad for him. But reading these ramblings, you might be like, he needs to be watched. Does he have a trench coat? Take that away.
And you did have a trench coat.
I did. And I thank God I turned it into good for Silent Bob. 12:40 a.m., Scott.
Okay.
August 31st, 1989. Shadow notes number one. Get ready. It wasn't the first time I had a dream of its nature. I awakened in a strange room. Strange because it wasn't my own. There were no pictures of Batman anywhere. From the smell. Starts off strong.
All right. I tried to wait.
It starts off not bad. It's like, all right, he's a high school kind of, dramatist level writer. But once you get to like, you know, this, I could tell the strange room was not my own because there were no pictures of Batman. Then you just feel bad for this fuck.
It's the first cry for help in the whole piece. It's just like...
First cry for help. From the smell and the general feel, I could tell that the room was vacant and had been for some time. This was not anybody's room. It was a non-bedroom, Scott.
Oh. Oh,
he's coining phrases.
I'm trying to think of what that is.
You've heard the phrase non-bedroom. You've dropped it in your daily life, haven't you? Like, Alex, get your ass in the non-bedroom.
The bathroom. Like, what is the non-bedroom? Every other room? She's like, you mean the kitchen?
It's a fancy way of saying kitchen. Here we go. It was a non-bedroom. It was hers. That gets its own paragraph, Scott. It was hers. That's
isolated.
It. Here we go. New paragraph. It hit me suddenly. I knew these walls, these sparse fixtures. This was the room of my reason. Now, Scott, for the length of the shadow notes, Kim Lochran's name is never used. She is referred to as my reason. And reason is capitalized with an R.
She's your reason, not meaning like your sensibility.
Obviously yes. Not. I lost all fucking sensibility the moment I committed these crimes to fucking paper. She is my reason for being. So I refer to her throughout these as my reason. It's so
amazing.
It's so take thy beak from out my heart. Oh my God. This motherfucker was such a romantic. This was the room of my reason. It resembled the real thing, except that her bed was no longer on the wall. Kim had a elevated bed that was like a bunk bed. And in its absence was a large sheet of green cardboard. This had a basis, I reasoned, in the idea I had once discarded that would have had me creating a large mural in the room while she was away. It was-
That's a lot. Explain, is that a real thing or a...
Yes. Apparently, I had a dream of where I wanted to build a mural or paint. I couldn't even paint. I couldn't fucking draw. But like I had this dream and I'm drawing from the notion that I was going to make a fucking large mural in her room while she was away. That's the scary part. While she was gone, it's like, welcome home.
She maces like,
that
you.
Would terrify a motherfucker. Oh, my mural. I can't see my mural.
Do you like it? Do you like it?
he screams through tears. Do you want to know what the mural was going to be made of, Scott?
I mean, all I heard is a weird sheet of green cardboard.
Well, guess what? He was going to put on that green cardboard. He tells us. He says, quote, it was to be made up of pictures from Sandman, the comic book, and would be completed upon her return from college.
Wow.
Could you imagine if you came home from college, walked in your room, that's the first thing you fucking saw? Wouldn't you go right back to college?
Especially if there's a guy going like, now you know what love is.
Love is endless, like the Sandman himself. I'm sure she would have been like, I don't even know what this is. What is this?
What is this stupid comic shit? What are you talking about?
What is Sandman? What the fuck is going on? Get help, Kevin, please. I begged you to get help.
I covered the whole wall.
I heard voices. Now back into the dream. Okay. I heard voices which I recognized to be that of her mother and her two aunts. They entered the room quietly in an effort to let me rest. Their curiosity drove them closer and closer, and fully conscious that they were present, I sat up in a brisk manner as if suddenly awakened. My exact words were, what the fuck? Which brought a round of titters from the trio.
So at this point, you're describing a dream where you wake up from a dream?
You know that old chestnut. I'll be honest with you. I honestly think he's fucking lying. I don't recall this dream at all. I think this motherfucker's making it up for the sake of writing this piece. He was so boring and lame, he didn't even have cool dreams. He had to make up his dreams.
You fictionalized your dreams.
Which sounds redundant. It's like bringing sand to the fucking beach. Maybe deep down, I was hoping Kim would eventually read these.
Gotcha.
Like, clearly, they weren't manufactured for no use. They're too well written. Like, this is a guy going, like, somebody's going to read this. So I bet
you're going to publish these.
Yes. My manifesto right before I take out, you know, me, Kim and her whole fucking family in 1989.
Grasping a Sandman comic.
Poor Neil Gaiman's like, it was a very respected comic book until he fucking catch her in the ride. My goddamn Sandman like, comic.
Who is this man? Who is this? Who is this? Kevin Smith.
It's unfortunate because it was such a lovely story.
Yeah. Trying to make people happy.
Her mother asked how my sleep was, and I climbed to my feet, replying that it was well. I still did not know how I had gotten there, or more importantly, why. I was wearing one of my sleeping shirts and a pair of underwear, but was not ashamed to walk around, although I did carry my blanket in tow behind me, covering my posterior region. There is a suspicious amount of detail to this fucking thing, man.
I feel like that's how you moved around the house normally.
It's only 12:40 a.m. in the morning. Like, what did I just fall asleep and woke up after 5 minutes and was like, listen to this shit.
Did you, what's interesting, what I would say, just to sort of pull Neil Gaiman back into this, he probably bears some responsibility.
Oh, you ain't kidding. So hopefully they fucking blame him when fucking Kev in the alternate timeline goes crazy and fucking kills 20 people in the convenience store. Instead of making a movie, he's like, you're Dante. Bang. You're Dante.
You're all Dante.
And this is hell, the final circle of hell, as he's fucking taken out by a fleet of Middletown cops through the window.
But obviously based on your sort of bizarre mural idea, you as a writer are heavily influenced by Neil Gaiman.
And not for nothing, but who said it was fucking bizarre, this mural? It sounds pretty metal. I mean, I don't agree with young Kev Smith on much, but, you know, my office would look better with a bunch of fucking cut-up Sandman comics on the wall, Scott. It's a little judgy.
Especially in the quarantine, where you're going to start it tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't even want to send you a fucking picture of my office. You'll see that I completed it. Before I found this journal entry, I was like, oh my God. I ran into a few more of her relatives on their way through the house to finish various duties. Butch, that's Kim Loughran's father, stepfather. Butch asked how I was doing, and I replied positively. He informed me in pleasant tones that the interior of the house was undergoing a little refurbishing. I offered my assistance and soon found myself carrying an old carpet out to the garbage. I mean, what the fuck? This is definitely a dream, because I would never volunteer to help. Like, that looks too physical. Outside, I ran into another of her many aunts. This one asked, "What are you doing here?" I shook my head. "Don't you know? I will always come back for her, to her."
Oh, boy.
Then,
is that the end of it?
Okay. Then the dream ended. That was the end of the dream, Scott. Thank God. But there's more writing in the shadow notes. That's just, you know, me telling you that the dream ended within the pages of the shadow notes. Then the dream ended. I called her mother later to invite her out as I ran some errands. And that's somehow in the real world. That's not even part of the nightmare dreamscape.
That's what I was about to say. Like, the end of the dream where it's like, I talked to her dad and then I told her I'll always come back for her. I was like, it didn't feel like a dream anymore. It felt like a version man, of you.
I take enough criticism for my art. Don't fucking step on my dreams and tell me my dreams aren't good enough. It lacked three act structure. It wasn't very coherent. Yeah.
Where's the payoff?
Where's the payoff? I called her mother. That's so creepy. I'm like, do you want to run errands? I'm sure her mother was like, I gotta go, Jimmy. Like, ran away.
Butch. Butch, he wants me to do errands again.
Her safe word was Butch.
His name.
Kim's mom was so real and straightforward. She was awesome. She cursed. She would have just been like, Kevin, you're fucked. Like, she would curse at me and stuff. She winds up in a lot of my female characters, I think, because she was like such a powerful female role model in my life. Like, my mom, of course, very powerful too, but my mom would never fucking curse. Mary Lou King, that's Kim's mom, just cursed like a fucking longshoreman. She came from New York. She was just so fucking real and stuff. And I love, she had that New York accent. So Kimberly, like, Kim's name is Kimberly Renee. And her mom would always be like, Kimberly Renee, get your ass down here. I loved how she said Kimberly Renee. There were no ERs in there whatsoever. It was just Kimberly. So I would talk to her mom even after me and Kim stopped going out and stuff like that. But I like can't believe that I was like, hey, man, do you want to go out for errands?
I would feel weird if you called me and asked me to go run out.
Hey, Scott, I'm in Oakland. You want to run some errands with me? Or like, no.
Like, no? Can we go to lunch or something normal?
Yeah. Well, on the way, on the errands run, we could grab some lunch and then I'll pick up my dry cleaning. And I just want to see if, you know, that fucking Johnny Mathis album ever came in at the fucking vinyl store. I mean, what errand? And also, what was I doing errands for my mother and I take somebody else's mother with me? Wouldn't that be cheating on my mother, kind of? I'm sure my mother would have loved it if I was like, you want to run errands with me? She would have been like, my God, yes. I've been waiting my whole life for my son to ask me to run errands. Instead, I'm asking somebody else's mother. I'm getting mothering side on the mom. Side, Scott. A little side mom. That's what we all want. I called her mother.
And she said no.
Let's find out. Oh, okay. I'm fucking dripping with anticipation. I called her mother later to invite her out as I ran some errands. I figured she'd be feeling fairly lonely at this point because Kim had gone to college. Due to previous engagements, she canceled out. And I found the topic directed at the reason. So she, you know, she was like, oh, I've got something to do. Otherwise, I'd go. But that was really her probably just being like, why would I go run errands with a teenage boy?
But
I'm on the fucking phone and she's like, Butch.
Butch, he's getting weirder. He's getting weirder.
Now he stopped talking about Kimberly Renee. He wants me to go on errands, Butch.
How do you say errands? Errands? He wants me to go on errands.
Errands, Butch. I ain't doing that.
I don't want to go on my own errands. Why don't I go on his?
Butch, get on the other phone, dial 9-1, and wait. Because if he says one more fucked up thing, you press that 1.
He's going to bury me alive, Butch. I don't know what to tell him.
Did you ever see The Vanishing, Butch? This is like that. The golden egg, Butch. They had seen The Vanishing. They were the most movie-watching people I ever met in my life. Every day they went to the video store across the street from their house and rented fucking like 6 new releases.
Wow.
And they would also bootleg them. They were like the biggest lawbreakers I ever knew too. They would record them and like they didn't vend them, but they just had this massive video library, but everything recorded at SLP so you can get like 3 movies on a fucking tape. But you know, it was kind of like watching a movie, like a old ass tape on YouTube or something like that. Like in a pinch, it would do you and stuff, particularly if like, oh, I can't get my hands on this because it's a hot new release. So they were like the house, you could rent tapes from their house, except for free. Like they were like, oh, do you want to see the new Robin Williams movie? They had it and shit like that. So they watched a bunch of fucking movies. I would go over there and just watch movies with them and stuff. You know, I would have preferred to do some heavy teenage petting, but like I was happy to watch fucking movies with them. And they would do shit like, we're going to watch all the Indiana Jones movies. I'm like, fuck yeah. So her canceling, I mean, I say she canceled out, but really it sounds like I asked her and she was like, no, that's not canceling. Canceling implies that she had an interest in going on errands at one point. But,
well, she can't cancel unless you accept it.
Exactly. she canceled out and I found the topic directed at the reason. Now, that means I steered the topic toward Kim. Her mother informed me that the trip had gone well and that she was enjoying it. I told her she would. I guess the trip to college. Yes, the trip to college, and she was enjoying it. And yet I said I told her she would. Like, I don't know what that means, but it had its own paragraph, so it's creepy and foreboding.
You told Kim she would. You were just like, you will enjoy your trip.
No, I told her mom that she would.
Oh, okay.
I told her she would. I told Mary Lou that Kim would. Like, she would enjoy that. I don't know. I don't know how I said it, but it sounds
she'd love to drive.
Unsettling. Yeah. Of course she'd love that. She's such a hater. 40 minutes prior to the phone call, I decided on the exact day of my visit. I will leave October 10th and stay for 1 week. I have no expectations. I need only to view her, if even once. This sounds like a stalker to me, man.
So, and you're saying that you've chosen the day you're going to drive to Pittsburgh, right?
Yes. Or not drive, train, probably take a train. I'm going to Pittsburgh to see her, but I haven't told her. I haven't told anybody.
Oh, okay. That's
weird.
It's
a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, put through that prism. That's pretty bad.
So you're just going to, your plan was like, I've decided the day you're going to show up in Pittsburgh. Were you going to rent a hotel?
No, I didn't have that kind of money, nor did I have money to rent a car. So I was taking a train. The train trip was like high enough. I think it was like $49 to go to Pittsburgh. And then I was hoping to just crash at her dorm. And she wasn't even out of sorority yet. She was just at a dormitory.
Does this happen? Does this end up happening in like outside of the...
It literally does. It literally does. Like, I do go to Pittsburgh. I drop a bunch of hints to her. And then, like, when I do show up, she was, like, shocked, but at the same time not shocked because I'd hinted about it. And I did say,
like, I'm going to come. I'm coming there. I'm totally coming.
There were, like, three campus police pointing fucking tasers at me going, "You're right. He came. He came."
You aren't kidding. He's here.
But this Kev will go see her on October 10th and stay for 1 week. That Kev goes to the Carnegie Mellon Library and watches Citizen Kane for the first time on a Laserdisc player.
The real Kev.
Not the fantasy Kev who's dreaming of doing shit. I got to eat at the cafeteria where it's like you could have all the cereal you want and shit. I was like, man, I fucked up by not going to college. Look at all this free fucking cereal and shit.
Fucking cereal and movies? That's like, that became your, that was your thing.
That was my thing then. I was doing that same shit at home with my parents, eating cereal and watching movies. But I was like, oh man, I could have spent $40,000 a year to do it somewhere else.
You could do that in other places?
This kid is going to go to Pittsburgh unannounced, and he has no expectations, Scott. He only needs to view her, if even once. Just like the guy, remember when we drove up to her graduation? And like, I saw her walk, and then I was like, all right, let's go. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? It took us 8 hours to get here. And I was like, yeah, but like, that's it. That's enough. And then we turned around and went home and shit.
And we almost died.
This motherfucker's.
And we almost died. Let's like.
And we hydroplaned in a rental car on the way back under a fucking 18 wheeler.
Yes. And then we stopped.
And how you fucking at that point weren't like, I'm gone. Fuck him and fuck Clerks. Like, I almost died. And all we did was look at her. We viewed her, even once.
It was like the fucking, it was like that moment fucking Chevy Chase went to the Grand Canyon. We fucking vacation.
Oh my God. But that dude, he was able to pull that move because, like, what? That was in 1993 when Kim graduated. Yeah. He'd been planning this move for 4 fucking years. I'll just see her and I'll fucking leave. Mercifully, he didn't have to do it that first trip. He got to spend like the week with her and stuff. But he did it. He does make this plan happen. So I'm thinking maybe he started writing these shadow notes so that he could eventually present it to her when he got there.
Ah, so to be as a sort of document of how thoughtful he is about her.
Oh God, yes. And what a good writer he is. She always liked his writing and encouraged him and stuff. And I am at this point just getting back into comic books because I'd been working at the rec center with Walt. And then after a period of time, like he didn't talk to me for the first 8 months and shit, we started talking about comics. And so I'm into comic books. And so now I'm trying to pass them off on her, including Swamp Thing and Sandman. So hence that's where the mural would make more sense. It wouldn't just hit her cold like, what the fuck is this? I'd already been hyping Sandman to her. I'm like, you know, and her finding out that I read comics, like, what? Really? Like, that's, there are people I'm going to school with who read comic books. There's a comic book store down the street called Phantom of the Attic and stuff like that. So it was a new development, and the comics I was reading were pretty literary, and she was a lit major. So this was something that we were kind of slowly bonding over from a distance.
Gotcha.
Comics had entered my life, hence they were entering hers as well. So he says, I have ideas brewing, of course. God, that sounds creepy as fuck. Can't let this visit be a forgettable one. I do look forward to this. It is 1 month and 10 days away. I spent the rest of the day in mental anguish and pain. My reality was clashing with my alternate reality, and the immense strain this was causing my mind caused me to scream at 3 separate occasions in the day, Scott.
What? What? Like, what's the alternate reality?
My reality, which I guess would be me dating Amy LaPointe, is clashing with my alternate reality, which is me wanting to be with Kim, I would imagine.
Gotcha. And you screamed.
And this strain.
Do you remember? Do you have any recollection?
Fuck no, but I bet you he'll describe it for us.
Okay.
Maybe. Let me look ahead. No, he doesn't. What a terrible writer. He doesn't even deliver on his promises. A setup, no payoff.
So you, but you, and you have no recollection of like the, like just howling in pain or at any given point in your life?
No. I remember screaming as like a 5-year-old when I got locked in a trunk once, but like that wasn't it. Either that or a fridge. I don't know. I was locked in something and I screamed, but other than that, I've never really screamed in my life. I don't have the pitch for it. Maybe, you know, maybe I was like, why? But I don't know. I don't remember that. Let's see what he says. He says, the fear crept in and told me that in a month she could have a boyfriend and your visit would be an unwelcome one. I beat the fear down. Yeah, there you go. I beat the fear down, Scott. He's brave, this young Kev Smith. He's a fighter. I beat the fear down with the psychological assurance that I have no misconceptions or expectations about what this trip will bring. I am simply visiting my reason with the usual flair for the dramatic. Well, at least he's self-aware.
It's a strange sentence to be, on one hand, just like admitting the psychological reality that you're just like, I'm fine if I just go there and she has a boyfriend and if everything's okay, yet at the same time holding in your mind that she's your reason for existing.
You don't got to be, you know, fucking Freud to figure out this kid's not well, Scott.
It's complex. You're trying to be two very diverse ideas at the same time. You're trying to be the adult, right?
I think I'm just trying to be interesting, and I'm not. Like, I'm manufacturing, like, interest by being like, everything is a hard decision in my mind, grapes. Like, I cannot handle this trauma of the dramatic. Like, he's just so fucking big, man.
Well, calling any other human being your reason is pretty dramatic.
Especially at age 19.
But is it,
like, if anyone was my reason at age 19, if any woman was, it was my mother. She literally could throw me out of the house and she made me get jobs all the time. So I should have been like, my reason told me to get off my yeah. fat ass and get a job today.
My reason drives me crazy.
I said, reason, leave me alone. I'm playing Atari. And my reason said, I'm going to tell your father.
But it's an intense expression. To me, it is an intense thing at 19 years old, whether misguided or not, to declare that another human being is your reason for existing.
I mean, that's your only problem with all this? You're like, this is where I draw the line. Who the fuck calls anybody their reason? I'm like, oh my God, there's so...
I'm trying to pick something.
This poor son of a bitch.
Focus on something.
He's got so much wrong with him to diagnose. That's like fucking... taking Jack the Ripper and be like, oh, I think he's a little antisocial.
He's stabby.
But this kid, boy, he's in love with his own words and shit. And it does hearken to a couple years from now, this same kid with, you know, with a little more experience under his belt and fucking perhaps a little less reason, would figure out like, oh, I want to write a screenplay. And he writes his first screenplay and he gives it to Scott. And Scott says, like, oh, we're going to make this movie first. Because even though Scott had written a screenplay before fucking I did. And I said, why? And Scott's like, you've been like, it's like you've been writing for years.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I have been writing for years. This is that writing, Scott.
Hey, man, these are your like people like that's where it's like, take it for what it is. But it's like, you know, I will say, that it's great. You know, I mean, I know you don't feel this way.
Let's go easy. They'll be thrown around the C word. It's courageous.
Well, I don't think that, you know, I'm sure you don't find it this way, but it's like, I think it's, I'll say admirable to basically open the, you know, or take your pants down in the sort of like, to expose the sort of you know, it's like you've chosen to expose the, you know, of the 10,000 hours, if you take that sort of concept, like you've chosen to expose like our 1500
3 minutes,
few hundred to give people, you know, to give people out there, I think the sort of the ability to sort of see process, right? Which is like, even you read it back now and you're not like, ooh, there's some juicy morsels in there.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this kid's got it. He's got a gripping style. I want to know what happens next. It's a real page turner. I think I read it out loud to punish that boy. Because this would be his nightmare. Like, what do you mean you're fucking reading this out loud to more than Kim Loughran? Like, who's Scott Mosier? What's the internet? What is a podcast? There'd be so much to unpack for that poor motherfucker. His head would explode.
Oh, if you could go back in time and sort of play, be like, this is me. Oh my God, that would be the most meta idea ever.
Or I play it for him.
You go back in time.
I play it for him, and he's just like, who would say such things? And I'm like, you do. You say those things. This is like, whether people like want to admit it or not, like it or not, this is the bridge to Clerks. This motherfucker expunged his soul in these pages so that by the time he stepped up to write Clerks, he could write some fucking jokes instead of this navel gazing sadness. Fuck, man. Otherwise, could you imagine how intolerable the first draft of fucking Clerks would have been? It would be like Dante looks for his reason. You're like, I think I need a glossary to understand your comedy script.
Yeah. You're like, what? So it opens on a man gluing Sandman comics onto a woman's wall.
What's that have to do with convenience?
Yeah. Who are these three women who think he, why is he walking around covering his ass with a blanket?
I think it's awesome to hear what you picked up and retained, though. The fucking tidbits. Like,
oh,
he's
got
three ants. He's got a blanket on his ass.
It's all. It never goes away. It's all right there.
Okay. He goes. Kev continues. Young Kev. Emo Kev. Whether she welcomes me with open arms or not is inconsequential, Scott. As I have said, I need only to view her, if even once. Did I repeat that twice? I literally did.
You did.
Like three paragraphs up. And I remind the reader in a real shitty way, as I have said. And since Kim is the intended reader, like I'm suddenly chastising my reason.
As if people are arguing the fact.
I'm sure if she ever did read this, she would have been like, thank God I don't fuck this guy anymore. He was insane. The killer inside me. How did I fucking live with this? All right. He continues, Scott. Does she know? Has she any clue as to what I'm feeling and have felt for so long?
No.
Does she know why? No, and if she did, would she call the police? Does she know why I had Brian make that call? Oh, Brian Johnson
shows up. And he calls
comic
her.
Comic Book Men's Brian Johnson in an early appearance. Yeah, I apparently had him call her on my behalf. Maybe to say, like, he doesn't like Amy, he likes you. Maybe. I don't know. I can't recall exactly. But I did have him call. I didn't. He did. Does she realize that ours had to be a clean break? A silent one. Why? Why did she realize?
She's that? Like, I don't realize that. Why? Do you have any idea?
Yeah.
And it's not even.
She's like, I'm all for the clean break, but. You're never silent. Yeah. So
and it's not a clean break. You're coming over here now. and you're obviously pining for me. And you did a half Nelson, a happy half Nelson.
You gave me that happy half Nelson. I knew what your fucking plan was right then and there. You were going to come visit me at my college one day, unannounced, and stay with me for a week.
The clean break, huh? Is that the...
You've had a clean break from reality, Kevin. Does she know how painful it was for me to not spend the time with her right before she left to go to college? Does she know how badly I wanted to say goodbye? Does she fathom the joy my heart was filled with when she entered the store that day, allowing me something to hold me over until the day I felt it was safe? So apparently she dropped into Quick Stop on her way to college.
And said, hey.
Yeah. It's like, hey, what's up? I'm going to college. And I was like, don't you know this has to be a silent clean break?
You immediately turned your typewriter. While she's in the
I'm
room.
I'm like, I can't talk.
She's like,
hold on.
I'm right here.
Hold on. Let me. I'll finish writing this and you can read my thoughts. I'm working on my shadow journal, Kim.
Shadow notes.
The shadow notes. That's true. Branded name and shit. I fucked it up. Let me see. Does she fathom the joy? We did that. Does she fathom the joy my heart was filled with? Wait, where? Does she know how painful it was? Does she know how badly I wanted to say goodbye? Does she fathom the joy my heart was filled with when she entered the store that day, allowing me something to hold me over until the day I felt it was safe? I wished to hold her every day since we've parted. This is not an obsession. This is my heart. Well, I beg to differ, Scott. I think this is an obsession.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
This kid, this version of Kevin Smith, unless he don't get to make Clerks one day, meet you, probably winds up on like Investigation Discovery. He had a flair for the dramatic and a penchant for murder.
Well, it's true. The only thing you have going in your favor is you have no courage to commit violence.
Too gutless to gut anybody. I can fully deal with the reality of the situation. This is not Fatal Attraction. This is Kevin and Kim. It's sounding dangerously like Fatal Attraction. I mean, I just retitled Fatal Attraction.
Well, what's weird is like if you're writing something about a relationship and you feel the need to say that it's not Fatal Attraction, it's because you yourself are concerned about certain passages and how they might read as Fatal Attraction-y.
This guy, he's about to reference something that really places this in time. I, in my head, thought I was at Quick Stop already. Because in my head, I interview for Quick Stop after I see Batman in 1989. But I'm not, because I'm about to say something that indicates I don't even know Quick Stop exists yet. Listen to this. Her uncle came in and we spoke for a while. Most people blow him off, but I listened intently to what he had to say, so much so that he continued on for 15 minutes, and I never wished him away, all because he was of her world, from her family. And if I could just get a little bit of her from him and the things he said, .. I miss her so very much. So, well, as I was reading that, I'm like, well, wait a second. Her uncle lived a few miles from Quick Stop, and I don't remember him ever coming into Quick Stop. And that's because he didn't, Scott, because the next paragraph puts me at a very specific place in time. The girl I work with, Diana, has a crush on me.
Oh.
So this is back before I work at Quick Stop. This is at Andy K's.
Krausers.
Andy K's. Or I think it was Krausers before it became Andy K's in Atlantic Highlands. Yeah. In my mind, I see Batman in 1989. And then my mom is like, you got to get a job. And then I fucking go interview at Quick Stop. But it wasn't Quick Stop in 89. It was Krausers that I had the fucking job, that I got the job at after. After I worked at, like, you know, fucking the graveyard and dominoes and shit like that. That's crazy. In my head, all these years, it's been like Batman to Quickstep. That's not the timeline. Quickstep doesn't happen for like another year, I don't think. I don't start Quickstep till the summer of 90, maybe. How interesting.
So it's Batman's. It's Batman. Batman leads you to Krauser's or Andy K. And just so I'm clear, you see Batman and then your mom's like, get a job.
Yeah.
Those are related.
Yeah. She was just like, you saw what happened to that boy's family. Get a job.
I don't want to die, Tyga.
We're not millionaires, Kev. I'm like, and so get a job or else your parents will wind up dead in an alley, you fucking worthless bum. It's all right. I guess I follow the logic. You know, you've ruined Batman for me. Thanks very much. Grace, he thinks the Dark Knight has anything to do with his job prospects. He's nuts. Tell him to stop writing them shadow notes.
I better not show up in them shadow notes.
You're, whoa, what is that? Nothing. Yeah. Mom, tell him he will never show up in my shadow notes.
Because he doesn't love me.
He doesn't understand the darkness, Mom. She doesn't know I'm coming. What might happen? My mom would be like, why would you go someplace uninvited and not tell people you're arriving? Because I'm in love, Mom. And that's what you do when you're in love.
When you find your reason.
Grace, he's giving me a reason to kick him out of the fucking house. Pay rent, do something. But this is pathetic, Grace. Pathetic. Okay, in closing, the girl I work with, Diana, has a crush on me. It's obvious and predictable. Look at how judgy this fucking prick is. And let me tell you something. Like, Diana was incredibly attractive and way out of his fucking league. And he's like, it's so predictable. He was incredibly lucky, you know, that she had an interest in him. She was a few years younger than me, so of course she was fucking gullible. Because any fucking woman my age would have like been like, don't spend time with him. He writes shadow notes.
Is that the shadow note guy?
Shadow Knight himself.
The shadow knight.
Notes. They're like, you're going to wind up in a human garden like in that movie Motel Hell. Stay away from him. He's fucking creepy. listen to this. I let her dream, but never lead her on or inform her that I know. These others, they are cute and somewhat interesting, but there can be only one that I truly breathe for, Scott. My mind hurts from the torture. I am in contradiction of my true self. I pray often. Perhaps I'm being a bit too theatric. Thus endeth Shadow Notes 1, Scott.
I mean, at least there's some self-awareness at the end. Like, after all that, you're like, maybe I'm over-dramatizing things, which I think is at the core of the whole thing, which is you were spinning the sort of narrative of your life.
Yes. Like
you were spinning it to the sort of to a sort of literary level that you were hoping or wanting it to be. You know, you're trying to marry your life with some sort of like literary being, and that's why it's so amazing.
I get to the end of the piece and it doesn't say LOL at the end. Fuck this guy. He's so earnest and serious and shit. I have so many questions for him, but I'm going to honor and respect this young Kev Smith, because he gets me here in life. I live a very fucking nice life because this kid, you know, wrote shadow notes to himself.
I like that's what, like, I think that one, it's like the truth of what you said, which is like, he, whatever you did got you to where you are. So it's like everyone should be outright. like everyone should start a shadow notes. You were craving that experience, right? Like you were like, it was right. A dramatic idea, right? Like in your mind, you go like, this is a dramatic idea. This is a sort of dramatic gesture. And as a writer, in a way, I feel like you were like, I'm going to do this thing so I can experience it. You know what I mean? Like there's a certain amount of romanticism too. You were very like, I do find like at the heart of all this stuff is this sort of, is a romantic. You're just deeply romantic. Like it's all about like the drama of romance, and you're sort of like want to do these dramatic gestures and live this sort of really dramatic life, you know? And so that aspect of you has always existed.
Perhaps you're being a bit theatric, Scott, but there are five more of these, each probably more delicious than the last. And we will get to all of them over the coming few weeks as a very kind and generous Scott Mosier analyzes Kevin and comes up with the conclusion that he's not dangerous. He's just sad.
That's a t-shirt right there. Not dangerous. Just sad.
There it is, man. Fucking we've gone and just raked old fucking emo Kev over the coals again. Somewhere in the streams of time, everything he ever worried about, you know, in regards to his writing would come true eventually.
His worst nightmare.
Exactly. And it's made worse by the fact that it's like I'm the one betraying him. Like he's got to have mixed feelings about it. He can't just be like, he's a fucking big fat jerk. He's got to be like, well, I become that big fat jerk. So, and you know, if I get to glimpse into the future, that big fat jerk has a really nice fucking house. So maybe he knows what he's fucking talking about. And then I sell out on myself, and then I never get to Clerks because I don't have the inner fortitude or moral strength to make a decision. And then the whole fucking timeline collapses in on itself.
Yeah, you can't know too much about your future because at the end of the day, you needed to like express all of this absolutely delicious drama in these shadow notes in order for you to sort of arrive out the other side free to be fun and funny and entertaining.
It's true. This may be me exercising my fucking demons.
It's true. Like, what's funny too is like, I would be curious. Think about this between episodes. It's like, it wasn't like when you're in high school, you weren't trying to be funny, right? It wasn't like you weren't writing funny sketches. Like this feels like an interim. This is like a middle. Because it felt like you wanted to be funny. You wanted to be funny. And all of a sudden, maybe you were like, I'm an adult. I need to be serious.
Or maybe being funny was easy, you know, on the surface or in public. But really what I yearned for was like, I don't want to be a clown. I want to be an artist. I want to be a writer. That shit did not work out for that fucking boy. He got to be both. He got to be, you know, a clown, but he wears his heart on his fucking sleeve. The crying on the outside, I guess. That kind of clown.
Yeah.
Fucking A. Look at you. And just like a therapist, you're like, what I want you to think about over the course of the next week
is why? Like, why did this happen?
Why did you do this?
You were funny. You were funny. You were fun. Why did you become melodramatic and weird?
because she was my reason, Scott. I don't know if you fucking listened very closely.
I did.
It's the time for the reason of my life. Hopefully somewhere Kim Loughran is flattered by this and not terrified and not going like, God, I dodged a bullet. I knew it.
Or both.
Everything at once. Yeah. There it is, kids. That is Smodcast for this week, man. For Smodcast, I'm Kevin Smith.
Scott Mosier.
Have a week.
This has been a production of Smodco Internet Radio. Sir, only at Smodcast.com.